You are now online with Andrea, with your host, Andrea Garrison.
Good afternoon. Welcome. You are now online with Andrea. I am your host, Andrea Garrison. I would like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. Our topic today is the book, The Anticipatory Organization, Turn Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage. And it is by the New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author Daniel Burris, who is our guest today. Hello there, Daniel. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Just fine. I was telling you before that I just loved your book. And what I liked about it is, you know, when I looked at the title, I thought, this is great for organizations. But when I read the book, I said, this is wonderful for everybody.
Well, thank you. I think that is the reason I called it the anticipatory organization versus the anticipatory individual is because organizations are made up of people. And if there's only one person in the organization that's anticipatory, and everyone else is the crisis manager reacting to change, that person will not be happy. So I'd rather have the organization become anticipatory rather than just one person.
Right. Now, you...
But as you also noticed, though, this could be applied to whether you're a teacher or a parent or a student. I mean, really, the principles work for anyone.
Yeah, it's true because life has a lot of twists and turns, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, it's you in your bio, it says you're an innovation expert and futurist. Now, how did you become an innovation expert and a professional futurist?
Well, that's a good question. I started out teaching biology and physics long ago, many decades ago. So I'm really a teacher at heart, and I understand technology and science. And I've started 6 companies over the years. 5 of them actually were profitable in the first year. 4 of them were national leaders in the first year. My first business, actually, I had an airplane design, very innovative airplane design. I had 37 national locations in the first year with that. And the last business I started, I created the first national mobile real estate apps that if you use Zillow or any of those, you're using the software that we created. So there have been a wide variety of companies. But my main business I've been doing now for 35 years is Burris Research, and that's where I have been working with the future and helping people to understand the power of how you view it and how to actually turn change into advantage. So I've written 7 best-selling books on it, and of course we're talking about book number 7 today. And I've written literally thousands of articles about it. I've given close to 3,000 keynote speeches around the world about the future. So really, for 35 years, I've been really studying and helping people learn about and take advantage of the opportunities the future represents.
You know, it's funny. I saw a documentary recently on artificial intelligence. And I would imagine in your work, as a consultant and a speaker, that artificial intelligence comes up often in terms of, organizations, companies trying to figure out how do we deal with that, you know, and that's changing.
Well, absolutely. As a matter of fact, in 1983, when I started my Burris Research, my company, I came up with a list of 20 technologies that would create all the economic prosperity going forward. And on that list, of course, was the internet and digital technology and so on, fiber optics. And but I also had artificial intelligence in there as well. So I've been covering that for 35 years, and I've worked with companies like IBM and their Watson and Google and others. So I really have a very deep understanding of many of the technologies shaping the future, as well as artificial intelligence. And I think, you know, one of the things that's really important, I think would be good to start out with right now, is looking at the future of that, since there's a lot of debate right now with people worrying about AI, as we call it, artificial intelligence, taking all the jobs. And that is, let me help with that by helping you to realize, I would call it symbiotic computing. Now, again, I taught biology at one time. So what symbiosis is in the natural world is two animals, two creatures that are separate creatures, but they need to live together in order to exist and survive. So as we humans go forward in time, we're going to find a symbiotic relationship with AI. Now, here's what I mean by that to help all of our everybody understand exactly what I'm talking about. Right now, IBM's Watson, their supercomputer, their AI, knows more about oncology than any oncologist. And of course, oncologists are the doctors that treat cancer. So if you knew someone who had cancer, heaven forbid, I'm going to give you three choices. A really good oncologist, choice one. Choice two, just the AI Watson. Or choice three, a really good oncologist that has access to everything that Watson knows. And I think you already know what you would pick. You would pick the really good oncologist that also has the use of AI. That is symbiotic computing. So instead of eliminating and getting rid of people, what we're going to do is find AI to be an amazing complement for all of us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a beautiful answer. And I'm sure that will calm some of the fears that people have. Now, just tell us, what inspired you to develop the anticipatory guideline, and then how did you develop the anticipatory organization guideline into something that works?
Well, another really good question. One of the things that I developed many decades ago, because there is no shortage of trends about the future. The reason a lot of people don't pay attention to them is, as you well know, some happen and some don't happen. In other words, it's kind of like going to Las Vegas. You don't know what's going to work and what's going to happen and what isn't. So what I did years ago is I came up with a way of separating the wheat from the chaff. I call it the hard trends that will happen from the soft trends that might happen. So once you learn this, you will know the trends that are going to happen for sure versus the ones that might happen. And the reason that's powerful is if you can predict the future and be right, you have a big advantage. Let's face it, we're all really good at hindsight. Should have bought Google when it first came out. Should have bought Facebook when it first came out. Should have never sold that house. Should have done this. Should have done that. And, of course, that's all hindsight. You can't change the past. You can only learn from it. What I'm talking about is strategic foresight, the ability to separate the things that might happen from the things that will happen so that you know with confidence what to take action on. So over the years, I have been teaching individuals and corporations how to be anticipatory, how to use this hard trend, soft trend methodology. And it's produced such amazing results that I decided I needed to turn it into an online video learning system. And I did that a couple of years ago. I called it the Anticipatory Organization Video Learning System. And it was immediate, and I'm happy to say, award winner, won a top 10 award. And it is being used by small businesses, by individuals, by big businesses, even being used for leadership training at the Pentagon. And it's been so successful in helping people to get to the future faster, solve problems faster, see the future and take advantage from it. It really is so empowering that that is what led me to write the book, The Anticipatory Organization, because the learning system was so successful, I decided, you know, this has to be a book. So the book is really complementary to the learning system, meaning you could read the book by itself, or you could do the learning system by itself. And if you did both, it would even be better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to just emphasize that you say that this is a model for everyone. And in your book, it says, or it reads, although this book is titled The Anticipatory Organization, don't interpret that to relate only to massive companies. The anticipatory organization model is just as powerful for individuals and small groups as it is for larger organizations. Moreover, these anticipatory skills and strategies can be used by all members of an organization to build an environment characterized by innovation, collaboration, and a confident, shared view of the future.
Well, that last part you wrote is a great way for me to show the power of this for an individual, and that is how you view the future. I call it future view. So let me share that concept with our listeners right now. How your kids, how your employees, if you have employees, how your staff, how we all view the future to a great extent shapes how we act in the present. Let's face it, right now, there are people that might be buying Apple stock. There might be people that are selling Apple stock. What's the difference? Their future view of Apple. Right now, you may have an employee that's a really good employee that's thinking of leaving. Why? Well, their future view of staying looks bleak. You might have a customer that's thinking of going to somebody else for the first time ever. Why? Because their future view of staying with you has changed. And there are some kids that go to college and some kids that go to drugs. What's the difference? Their future view. You see, how you view the future will shape how you act in the present. And here's the interesting thing. How you act in the present will, in reality, shape your future.
God.
In other words, see, so here's the connection. Your future view will determine the future you. And I'm on a mission to elevate everyone's future view based on the new realities that are out there, because there's so many wonderful things out there. It's amazing. The problem, Andrea, is that bad news sells, good news doesn't sell. And if there is no bad news, they give you the anniversary of bad news. And it creates a gigantic fog that keeps you from seeing the amazing mountain of opportunity that's right there in front of you. And one of the things that I've done with this book and this learning system is showing you how to blow the fog away so that you can see the opportunity for you, for your family, for your kids, for your employees, for your business, for your career, that were previously invisible to you because they were fogged in. And what that means is your future view will elevate, and in reality, your future will as well.
Yeah, that's powerful. Now, your book states that being agile is very important, but it is simply no longer good enough. I had to read that again, you know, because I thought I had taken notes and I said, maybe I did that incorrect. But you meant that. And I went back.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And by the way, let me just say, I can tell why you have a great show, because you are really a good interviewer and you're pulling out some really good ones here. So let me just say that let's talk about what agility is, because right now, for the last 15 years or so, companies have all been working at trying to become agile. There's books about agility. There's things called agile innovation. There's agile this and agile that. But what does agile mean? It really is reacting quickly after a problem occurs. Agility is reacting quickly after a disruption disrupts you, your business, or your career. It is really a reactionary strategy. And what was missing is what I'm providing, because I think there are things you will need to react quickly to that you couldn't foresee. But what I'm teaching everyone to do in this book is what I call the biggest missing competency that is more needed now than ever before, and that is how to anticipate problems before you have them, so you can pre-solve them. I mean, how many times have people said, I knew that was going to happen?
Right.
And I would say, well, and I'm saying, why did you let it?
Yeah.
Most of the problems we're going to be suffering from a year or two from now, we could see right now in pre-solve if we learned how to be anticipatory.
Right.
And what about all these jobs? You know, there's all of these. For example, last year, Goldman Sachs laid off some 600 stock traders and replaced them with 300 AI programmers that basically use software to take over their job. Well, if those stock traders would have read my book, they could have seen that the level of work they were doing was going to be an easy one for AI to automate years ago, and they could have known exactly what training to get so that they could actually be making more money now rather than be looking for work now.
Yeah, but so, you know what it is? I think, unfortunately, and this is true for individuals and organizations, is I think it's hard for people to believe that AI can take over what they do. I don't know what it is inside of people. And I say this because I have spoken to many people who've said to me, oh, no. There's no way. And I look at them and I'm kind of puzzled because I'm like, why can't they see that?
I know what it is. I do know what it is. It's in me, it's in you, it's in every human. And that is when something comes to us that might disrupt our world on us, it might disrupt our career or our business or whatever it is that we do, it's human nature to protect and defend the status quo and to say, no, that's not going to happen or won't happen to me. Or, no, that's a long way off, way in the future. I'm going to be retired long before that happens. You know what? That's a natural instinct. But what I'm telling you is in today's world of transformational change, where change is accelerating in its speed, you need to get over it fast. And instead of just protecting and defending, by the way, that didn't work too good for Kodak, didn't work good for Blockbuster, didn't work good for so many other companies,
yeah.
They spent decades.
Instead and you mentioned, by the way, in your book, you did mention great companies. You know, you mentioned Dell, Hewlett-Packard, Motorola, Sony, BlackBerry, Blockbuster. Now, I could not, for the life of me, I was like, what happened to Blockbuster? And yet Netflix excelled. And Blockbuster, if they had anticipated, if they had acted on it, they could have been a leader and they could still be here if they were willing to make that transformation.
Yes, and the key here is think of it this way. Instead of protecting and defending the status quo, we need to have the confidence, and that's where what we're going to talk about in a few minutes, the confidence and the certainty to know the change is real and to then shift to a embrace and extend, embrace the new and extend its reach. Instead of protect and defend, it's embrace and extend. By the way, as a little side note, in my 1993 book, Technotrends, in chapter 2, there's a little section that's headed in bold, Blockbuster is busted. This is in 1993 I wrote this. and if you read what I wrote after it, based on the principles we're going to talk about in here today, I was describing Netflix way before Netflix started.
Right.
And exactly how they would do it. In other words, if I'm the only guy that could do this, I would not write a book. The reason I'm written this book is I want us all to learn how to see the future better. I want us all to learn how to pre-solve problems before they happen, because this is something that we can do. And with change accelerating, if we aren't solving problems before they happen, none of us are going to be very happy campers on this thing called planet Earth.
Now, would you say you're psychic or intuitive?
No, I'm not psychic. I'm not psychic at all. If this was a matter of being psychic, I wouldn't be able to teach it. And and therefore writing a book would, why bother? But because this is a learned principles that are actually quite simple. Matter of fact, maybe we should just teach some of those principles now to show your listeners how easy it is.
Right. And, but you, yeah, that's a good thing. And what I want to also say is you in your book, you say, and you'll probably bring this out when you start teaching, you say that reacting slowly while innovation is occurring quickly is toxic, if not outright dangerous combination. So that's what happened, correct, to Blockbuster, is they reacted too slowly, or that they didn't react at all, really?
Well, they reacted slowly, and as a matter of fact, there's a famous line from the CEO of BlackBerry when he saw the first Apple iPhone, and his comment was, "Why would anyone want to watch television on a phone?"
Ah,
right away he didn't get it.
Right.
And instead, he protected and defended. And what Blockbuster, when Netflix started happening, what did Blockbuster do? They were opening more stores, which is, of course, the opposite of what they should have been doing. But so how do you know when the future has actually shifted and changed? How do you have the confidence to make a bold move and know if I don't, I'm in trouble?
Yeah.
And that's where one of the key principles that I teach in the book comes in, and that is separating what I call the future facts, the hard trends that will happen, from the soft trends that might happen, which are all based on assumptions but may not happen. When you understand that difference, it makes all the difference. So it's really not that difficult, and I'm happy to share that whenever you'd like.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you say we can anticipate the future if we know how to do it. So you don't have to be psychic or intuitive. It's just knowing how to do it. So please explain the anticipatory organization model, if you can, briefly. Though I want to encourage people to get the book.
Well, exactly. There are many elements to it, and there's much to learn in the book, and it's far more than just trends, because I teach you how to skip your biggest problems and how to see new solutions and innovation ideas by looking in the opposite direction. But in this case, let's focus on being able to see the future with confidence. As I said, there's two types of trends. I call them hard trends and soft trends. Hard trends will happen, and soft trends might happen. So let me give you the advantage of both. The advantage of a hard trend is you can see change before the change occurs. You can see the disruption before it disrupts, when you learn how to do that.
So what would be an example of a hard trend versus a soft?
I'll give you a good one. There are three categories, first of all, and I'll give you an example from each one. See, again, it isn't that hard. There's only three categories. It's not 30 or 50. One of the categories is demographics. So in the United States, there's 78 million baby boomers. Now, here's a hard trend. They're going to get older. They're not going to get younger. That's a future fact. We know that for sure. And based on that, there's a whole bunch of fully predictable problems that we could pre-solve, as well as amazing opportunities. Let me give you an example. A lot of people love to go boating and love to go fishing. But as they get older, it gets hard to launch the boat. In some cases, it's even hard to get in the boat. Maybe you have a mother or father or grandpa or grandma like that right now.
Right.
And yet they love boating. So why don't we do something that's not been done so far? Why don't we start a company and create the easy launch trailer for seniors? If we created an easy launch boat trailer for seniors, there would be a built-in market. Let's face it, there's 10,000 people a day retiring. There'd be a built-in market that's growing every year for that product. And all you have to do is make it good. You would even know exactly which countries to export it to, the ones that have aging populations versus the ones that have young populations. Or let's take one more example. How about let's make a watch, a smartwatch. And you might think, well, there's a lot of competition for that. There's even the Apple smartwatch. And I would say, well, you could actually win using hard trends and do it very easily. For example, how about a smartwatch for seniors, 80-year-old and older? Now, at first you might say, well, they're not going to buy a smartwatch. And I would say, no, they're not. You're going to buy it for them. And why would you buy it for them? Well, all of the smartwatches today, they all have a little bitty sensor in it, a teeny little thing that lets you know motion. So if 90-year-old grandma's watch rapidly moves 4.5 feet, what happened to grandma? Well, she fell. Who needs to know it? You do, if it's your grandma. And let's say grandpa is getting forgetful and having trouble when he takes walks, he forgets how to get home. What does he do? All he's got to do is ask his watch, how do I get home? And it'll tell him, walk a block, take a right. You get the idea.
Right.
Now, those two products don't exist right now. And now, let me just ask you what you think. Do you think products like that are going to happen?
Oh, sure.
And of course, the answer is definitely. So here's the thing. If it can be done, it will be done. If you don't do it, someone else will. Wouldn't you like to know all the things that are going to be done that aren't being done today? And wouldn't that allow you to be an innovator with low risk? Because if you don't do it, someone else is going to.
Right.
You see, you take all of the risk away from innovation. And I just gave you one little example of hard trends demographics.
Right. I mean, this, and it's just, it's so obvious. There's nothing, no guesswork. It's very obvious. It's clear.
That's
the population.
I'm excited about it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
And so the another thing that is, let's take technology, something that some of us listening may not be good at. Well, let's just use an example here. Let's talk about the iPhone 15. Well, you might say, whoa, that's years away. We just got the 10. We don't have the 15 yet. And I would say, you might say, we don't know anything about that. And I'd say, yes, you do. For example, will the iPhone 15 have faster processing chips in it than the iPhone 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8? And the answer is, of course it will. Are you sure? Yes. Will they be able to fit more data in that phone, or is it full? And you already know, they'll get a lot more data in that. Matter of fact, is the cloud getting full?
But no, question, though, is it possible for an organization to move too fast, where it gets to the point where the population said, well, I don't really need the iPhone 15 because I'm happy with my iPhone 10. It's perfectly fine. So how do you balance between moving forward and not moving so fast where you're investing, as a company, so much money, resources into the future when you still have people that are, still enjoying the product you made just 6 months ago?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. First of all, there's an old saying, if it isn't broken, why fix it? But the new saying is, hey, if it works, it's obsolete. And what I mean by that is, whatever you've got, there's already the new version being worked on right now, and it'll be probably out next year. So that makes people think, well, maybe I should wait. But again, you could wait yourself right out of business, because usually the new devices give you an advantage over the old ones. And when it comes to business, of course, it's a competitive advantage. So what we need to do in developing new products is not just make them faster, because it isn't about how fast we make things or advancing quickly. The key is advancing in a productive and good direction. And that's another thing that I help to provide in the book, is to look at the human side of all of it, not just the technology side. Frankly, the human side is the most important side, because we live in a human world. And when you understand the human side of the future, not just the technical side, all of a sudden you see how you can move forward at the speed of need.
Yeah, the speed of
and
need.
Moving forward at the speed of need is a perfect speed to be going.
Right, yeah, that's a key phrase, speed of need. Yeah, you say transformation will continue to happen at increasingly faster rates of speed. Disruptions will also happen at a faster rate. That raises an essential question. How are you going to deal with that? That's from your book, not my question.
Now, that's absolutely right. That's exactly right. And so how you deal with it is realize that disruption is really a choice. You see, it isn't a choice if you don't know how to separate hard trends from soft trends. But when you learn how to do it, you can see the disruptions before they disrupt. And you can ask yourself, you know, do I want to be the disrupted, reacting and putting out fires and crisis managing, or do I want to be the disruptor? Because if I don't do it, someone else will. And one other, and so in other words, disruption becomes a choice, which is empowering. Secondly, disruption is seen as something negative. Right now, all of us hate the word disruption. We don't like disruption. We don't want to be disrupted. Why is that? And that is because it usually happens to you. You're not the one creating the disruption. You haven't tried doing that yet.
Right.
But there's something called positive disruption. For example, today in the news, in the Wall Street Journal, as we speak, and this will be old news very quickly because it happened today, and some of you might be listening to this after it's been recorded, but every single facility, every single plant that Apple has globally right now is being run on renewable energy, and a lot of it is solar. Well, so in other words, they're not using, they've made their carbon footprint zero. Why did they do that? Well, they did that to create a better future for them and for us. They did that with intent. And they found, and you know, if it can be done, it will be done. And they thought, you know, some big company is going to do this first. Let's us do it. And others will follow. So they're becoming a leader. And probably getting others to now want to do that as well. So, you know, it's leading in a direction that we're all going anyway, and that is more renewable energy. We're all going that direction. We need to be going in that direction.
Right.
For a better planet when we go in that direction.
Exactly, yeah. You say the key, the real magic of both the old and new is integration. Direct mail and email, old media, new media, voice and data, full service and self-service. By balancing the two, you give each more value than they would have been individually.
Yeah, so the idea there is, when I was doing an interview back in 1990, way back in 1990, CD-ROMs were just really coming out, and the interviewer said, well, in the next couple of years, they'll probably be all paperless. And that's what was in the news back then. Everyone was saying, you know, within a couple of years, there'll be no paper anymore. And, of course, I knew better because of the principle I'm teaching in my book to all of you. And that is, it's not either this or that, either paper or paperless. The way to see the future better is to realize instead of thinking it's either this or that, you've got to think it's this and that. Mm. In other words, in the future, we're going to have a lot more paper, and by the way, a lot more digital. In the future, are there no physical books? Well, no, we're going to have physical books, but by the way, we'll also have more digital books as well, if both and. And in that comment you just read that I wrote in my book, the idea is there's something called legacy systems. And the legacy technology in a company is all the old stuff. And now there's all this new, more efficient stuff. But the trouble is, you got everything is running on the old stuff. And so what do I do? It's either the old or the new. And I'm changing that to say, actually, it's not. It's the old and the new. The key is how, if you design how you integrate the old with the new in a way that the integration of the two is more powerful than the old or the new is by themselves.
But it also has a better flow, correct? And and it creates less disruption, isn't it? If it's planned and properly planned and thought out, correct?
Wow. I'm just impressed with how great you are thinking this through. You did a great job. You couldn't have said it better. It is about flow. It is about creating a path. It isn't about it's this or that. It's about a flow. Actually, all of nature is a flow anyway. So why shouldn't this? Well said.
Yeah. Well, your book is just so powerful. And it's just, you know, people really have to read it to fully really get it, I think. I mean, hopefully we're touching upon it enough that will inspire people to read it, because it really is just fantastic. And hopefully it could help people to improve their lives and improve the different, you know, organizations that are in existence and those that will be forming.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll mention it at the end again, but let me just, since you said you should read the book, let me just mention that for your show, I'm doing something really special. I'm going to give all of our listeners today a free hardcover, not digital, a hardcover copy of the book right to you for free. All you got to do is pay a few dollars for shipping. It'll come FedEx to you within 4 or 5 days. And if you go to the website, theaobook.com, and you can get a free hardcover copy. I believe in the power of the book that much. I'm going to actually just give all of your listeners a copy right now. There you go. We can mention it later, but I thought this was a good point to bring that up.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, you say that we're in a unique period of transformation, one we have never experienced before, which calls for transformational thinking.
Yeah, you know, we say we're transforming things when in reality we're just changing them. And the reality is today, if you're changing something, you're actually falling behind every year. You need to be transforming it. And I'm saying, good. Change is tough. People have trouble with change. Although that's really a mindset. Frankly, we're humans are born loving change. Babies cry until you change them. They prefer rapid change. Why do we take vacations? I need a change. In other words, not all change is negative. The kind of change that is negative is the kind of change that affects you personally and you didn't see it coming. You didn't like that one. But again, using this hard trend, soft trend methodology, you can see those changes coming before they happen and turn it into an opportunity. So you brought up the term transformation, and it's really different. So companies will say they're transforming a process or a product or a service, and really most of them are changing it. So here's the difference. Let's understand that right now. When I was a young guy, I could listen to my music, one album per spinning disc, and the spinning disc was almost the size of a small pizza. It was 33 and a third in speed, and it spun around, and it was pretty good size. And then as I got older, a new technology change came along, and that was a CD. Now I could get one album per smaller spinning disc, and I like that, not necessarily because of its size. I liked it because it got rid of all the hisses and pops and scratches of my old albums. So I got all my new stuff on CD. Cool. Now, do I know where my CDs are today? No, they're probably with my film camera somewhere. Today, I've got all of my music, as well as all my photography, as well as all my old films, as well as access to the world in my smartphone that I carry with me all the time. That didn't change how I listen to music. It transformed it.
Ah.
So in that same way, Andrea, what we're going to be doing over the next several years is not changing. We're going to be transforming every business process, how we sell, how we market, how we communicate, how we collaborate, how we innovate, how we pay for things, how we design, how we educate. We're transforming the whole thing. Now, the hard trend is the tools are there to transform all of these things. Here's the soft trend. Will you, I'm talking to the listener now, right now, will you transform your processes, your products, your services And that's a soft trend. Remember, soft trends might happen. Hard trends will. So I don't know if you will or not, but you do have the choice. And by the way, if you don't, you're probably not going to be very happy, because that's where the future is going.
Right. You know, there's so much in your book, and I took so many different notes. But can you talk a little bit about everyday innovation and exponential innovation, if you could explain that?
Yep, I will be happy to. And I also, I'll do that first, and then I also don't want to forget to mention for everyone the power of soft trends, because we haven't talked about soft trends much. We've only talked about hard trends. So let's talk, first of all, about innovation. Most companies have a group of people that do the innovating, and they think they know how to do it. But what I've done in the book is show how, first of all, there are two types of innovations that are really powerful that they aren't doing. One is what I call everyday innovation. Now, that is empowering people to use the methodologies that I'm teaching to be able to predict problems that they're going to have with their team or themselves. And instead of just saying, I knew that was going to happen, solve it. And there are tools I put in the book, like opposites work better and problem skipping that we might talk about later, that allow you to come up with an inventive solution to an everyday problem. So when people in the business learn in your company at any level, learn how to do that, whether you're a receptionist or a custodian or a manager or an executive or the CEO, you can actually create what I call everyday innovation, predicting problems and pre-solving them at any level. And then there is the big stuff, and that is the giant leaps ahead. I would call it exponential innovation. And normally, big leaps ahead, most companies don't do because of the high risk. But in this case, because of knowing the difference between hard trends and soft trends, once you see the hard trends that are going to happen anyway, all of a sudden, risk reverses itself. And the risk of not doing it becomes greater than the risk of doing it. Because if you don't do it, your competitor is going to do it.
Right.
So it takes it, and it allows you to jump ahead with certainty. And we haven't talked about certainty. Let me bring that up right now, because it's a perfect time. And that is, the world is filled with uncertainty. What's going to happen with the stock market? What's going to happen with Russia? What's going to happen with North Korea? What's going to happen with your home values? What's going to happen with employment? In other words, there's all this uncertainty. From a personal standpoint and a business standpoint, strategy based on uncertainty has high risk. On the other hand, strategy based on certainty has low risk,
right,
and high reward. So hard trends give you the ability to find certainty, and certainty gives you the confidence to make bold moves. So as a leader, what you can do is by empowering your people to understand where the future is going and giving them a future view that has the fog blown away and they can see this amazing opportunity in front of them that's real for them as well as the organization, all of a sudden you can move forward faster, you can innovate better, and you can make those exponential moves with low risk.
So now tell us about soft trends.
Yes, we did talk quite a bit about hard trends. Soft trends, you might think I don't like, because they are the ifs and maybes about the future. But one of the things, I really love both hard trends and soft trends. Hard trends, I love them because it lets me see the disruptions and the changes that are coming before they happen to me. And that gives me choices. And I'm not in a crisis management mode. I can actually be in an opportunity management mode. The thing I love about soft trends is that if I don't like them, I can change it. So soft trends, you can change. Well, that's powerful. Let me give you a really good example. In this country, the United States, our health care costs have been going up every single year. They've been going up for a long time now. And it seems like there's no end in sight. Most people would make the mistake of thinking that that's a future fact. But in reality, no, that's an assumption. That's a soft trend. That could be changed. In other words, if you think you can't stop the increase in costs of health care, you don't trust. That's why, so far, healthcare reform has really been focused on health payment reform. How are we going to pay for the mess? Instead, it didn't give you a better knee, didn't help the doctor at all. So what I'm saying is that using technologies, for example, like cloud and virtualization, and just applying that towards purchasing and logistics with all of the hospitals in this country, you could flush billions, not millions, billions of dollars in waste out and lower healthcare costs. Or you could use a technology that's relatively new called blockchain. And right now, our healthcare ecosystem is not transparent at all. Let's face it, you don't realize when you have an aspirin in the hospital that aspirin costs $70. That's because it's not transparent. And you don't realize that the artificial knee that your uncle is getting, actually, the same exact knee, the same exact brand of knee, costs maybe $5,000 more at a different hospital because nobody knows the cost. It's not transparent. Well, a technology like blockchain, when it's applied to the healthcare system, will bring higher trust, higher transparency, and greater security. And by the way, that will be done. That's a hard trend. It's going to happen. And we're going to be able to lower healthcare costs. Now, see, I love soft trends. You don't like something? Change it.
Right.
Let me give you another one. Speaking of healthcare, over the last 10 years, there's been fewer people becoming doctors and fewer people becoming nurses in the United States. Right as you've got 10,000 people a day retiring, all these baby boomers, and you know they're getting older and they're going to need doctors and nurses. It looks like something unstoppable. It's been going on for, you know, over 10 years. But yet, that could be stopped. That's a soft trend. You could do something about it or not. Kind of like obesity. As a nation, we've been getting more and more obese every year for the last 20 years. Does that mean we're all doomed to be giant and fat? And the answer is, well, no, not at all. That's a soft trend. My sister works for a major company, and they gave everybody Fitbits in the company, the whole company. Gave them all Fitbits a couple years ago, and they decided to have weekly competitions. For example, my sister's team right now is climbing Mount Everest in the steps that they're taking. Well,
that's,
you know what's
great.
Happened? Here's what's happened in 2 years. They've gotten people off of their cholesterol drugs. They've gotten them off of their high blood pressure medications. They've been able to lower their weight. They're getting more physically fit. They're having fun doing it. Wow. So in other words, this company has said, well, you know what? The rest of the world can get fat, but we don't have to. That's a soft trend. We can change it here at this company. So here's what I'm saying, Andrea, and that is that we have the power as an individual and as a company and as a team, as an organization, we have the ability to shape a positive future for ourselves. And instead of just me predicting the future, I'm not that excited about that, frankly. You know what I'm excited about? Teaching people how to actively shape a better future.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
For themselves, for their family, for their career, for their companies, let's change what we can change. You may not be able to impact and change what's going on in the White House, but you can change what's going on in your house.
You know, that's a beautiful example, your sister's company. Because another quote from your book says, an anticipatory organization encourages people at all levels of a company or organization to employ anticipatory thinking, and from there to build a culture of innovation in which everyone can participate rather than just a select few. And for some reason, when you talked about the company who gave everyone in the company a Fitbit, it became something, it's like everybody was cheering the other person on, and it became a company-wide effort. And what a beautiful thing.
You know, I want to share a story I've never shared before, but it's a perfect example of what you're talking about. One day my sister said that there's a gentleman that works in her area, and he has been very overweight, and he's been struggling with it ever since she's known him for 15 years. And so when they got the Fitbits a couple of years ago, he started losing weight, and he would come up to her and say, "Hey, look, I actually did walk more than you did today." And they were going back and forth, and he got off some drugs. He lowered his, in other words, wow, this helped somebody who had been fighting a battle and losing forever, and he changed. And people listening to this might think to themselves, well, that company had to spend money and buy Fitbits for everybody. And here's what I would say. You know what? That company saved hundreds of thousands of dollars in healthcare costs by giving everybody Fitbits, because their healthcare costs were so dramatically lowered by getting everybody healthier that it made giving them the Fitbits the best deal they ever had in their life.
Exactly. Yeah. Small price to pay, really, for the savings. That was huge.
So the savings in healthcare costs were huge if you just want to think of it in terms of money. But if you expand and think bigger than money, what did you do for your employees?
Wow.
And the answer is you did something really powerful. You cared. And when you care for people, they care back, don't they?
Yeah, that's beautiful. So you also talk about the importance of keeping the antenna up. There's so much in your book.
Another good one.
Well, there's nothing but good stuff in your book.
Well, you picked another really good one. And now, so what the antenna is, it's an opportunity antenna. That is, I would like you to think of it, coming, that antenna, a lot of times it goes up, but it goes back down again too fast. Here's what I mean by that. For example, I'll share a little short story and then show you how it works with the antenna. I was at a meal with about 500 executives a couple of years ago, and the meal was designed by the supercomputer IBM's Watson. So it was a mixture of flavors and textures and ingredients that no human chef would ever put together. But I'll tell you right now that it was amazing. Everybody loved it. So I'm going to ask you a question. How long did it take Watson to not just read, but to learn everything in over a million cookbooks?
Wow.
As well as read and learn everything that was written about the sense of smell and the sense of taste, so that it could create a meal that no human chef would ever create that you would love? And the answer is that all took 1 second.
Wow.
And when people hear that, they typically say, wow. And then they go back and get busy doing what they've always done. And I would say, wait a minute, your antenna went up and it went down right away. Keep your antenna up a little bit longer, that opportunity antenna. For example, I was watching a commercial today while I was watching a program, and the commercial was about a lawyer, and it's the typical one that you see. If you're in an accident, call da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that kind of thing. And in the background were all these law books. And as you know, there are just shelves and shelves filled with law books of past presidents. So my antenna was up. So I was thinking, well, if it can learn all the cookbooks, why don't I have it read and learn everything in all the law books? If I was a lawyer and I was pleading a case and I had a little Bluetooth thing in my ear going to my phone, going to IBM's Watson in the cloud, I could be able to pull up a past president that I would have never known before. Would I have an advantage? And the answer is, of course. And by the way, if I don't do that, someone else will.
Right.
Or let's say that I'm a tax company. There's over 72,000 pages in the U.S. tax code. Well, my antenna's up. Why don't I just have Watson spend about an eighth of a second and read and learn everything in the tax code? If I was an auditor or an accountant, would I have an advantage? And the answer is yes. And by the way, if it can be done, it will be done. If you don't do it, someone else will.
Right.
It's pretty easy to predict the future and be right when you are using hard trends. So what I'm getting at here with the antenna is I want you to stay in opportunity longer and keep your antenna up looking for those opportunities, because they're all over the place. Most of us have that antenna, it isn't up at all, and we're just going around crisis managing, putting out fires, and going from one crisis to the next. Let's not do that. Let's face it, Andrea, why didn't a taxi driver think of Uber? And the answer is they were really busy being a taxi driver.
Right.
In other words, we can all be so busy that we can busy ourselves right out of business. So today, I'd like us to not just be busy all the time. You're going to be busy a lot, sure. But why don't you devote, and here's an action I'd like all of our listeners to take. I'm going to give you a go-home, take-home action right now. I'd like you to consider spending 1 hour a week, because that's doable. It's only an hour a week. Unplugging from the present and whatever you're doing and plugging in to what I call the visible future, the part of the future you can see based on the hard trends that are shaping the future. Let's face it, you're going to spend the rest of your life in the future. You should think about it a little bit. And in that hour, ask yourself, what are the hard trend certainties that I know will happen? What are the problems I can see that I'm going to have for sure, unless I pre-solve them? And why don't you just pick one and look at the opportunity that it represents and make it happen? You know what you'll do? You'll find yourself shaping the future and becoming an opportunity manager. And that's really what being anticipatory is all about. It's about being an opportunity manager of your life.
Beautiful. You say don't just take the time to work in your business. Take the time as well to work on your business.
Yeah, exactly. We're all, again, that's part of that whole thing of being busy.
Right.
And matter of fact, you know, I've talked to so many people, and high-level people as well as mid-level people, and they'll say, well, I just am so busy. I'm swamped. I'm backlogged of all the work I've got to do. And what they are realizing, what I'll say to them is, well, the way you do your work is the problem. You're doing your work the same way you did it 10 years ago, and now you're getting backlogged because you haven't changed how you do your work. You need to transform how you do your work. And by the way, there's some simple, easy ways you can do that. So even when we feel overwhelmed and overworked and we don't have time, the reality is, you know, you've got to, are you willing, in order to speed up, are you willing to slow down and think?
Yeah.
And spend a little time working on how you do what you do.
Yeah.
To buy back some time.
Right. There's so much in your book. You talk about the importance of defining the future now. You talk about elevate planning to accelerate results. And then you talk about how organizations should conduct a pre-mortem. And then you say, want to accelerate, slow down first. I love these points. And you talk about be the disruptor, not the disrupted. I love that.
Yes. And again, what I'm talking about is creating some positive disruption. Disruption can be extremely positive and wonderful. So let's do it instead of always reacting to it and getting bummed out by it.
Yeah. And you talk about maximizing relationships and the importance of rewarding desired behavior. And you talk about communication and collaboration and that collaboration is tied to abundance. And you say direct your future or someone else will, and that it's important to direct your future by sharing because change is only going to accelerate. These are all wonderful points that are in this book that I read of yours.
Well, thank you. There's a lot of good things in there. And again, that's the reason I'm directing people to go to theaobook.com and actually get a free hardcover copy. I mean, the reality is, if I was just giving away hardcover copies, I would be losing money. It'd be crazy. But really, here's why I'm doing it. I found that everybody that gets the book loves it so much, they recommend it to a whole bunch of their friends. In other words, for every book that I give away, I end up selling probably 10 or more because people love it and they recommend it to a buddy.
Right.
So I'm giving this to all of the listeners of this program by going to daobook.com. Happy to do it. You're getting a hardcover copy. I believe in it that much, and I also believe that you're going to love it so much you're going to recommend it to your friends.
You also say, yeah, I think they will do that. Choose to be extraordinary. Now, I have another question to ask you, and that is, if a student, a high school student, approached you and said, what do you think would be a good major for me to pursue in college? What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I would say that college is part of an exploration. They don't know what they don't know. They may discover something that they didn't know about as they're taking classes. So I would like them to develop a plan, because failing to plan is planning to fail. But the key is building change into your plan. I'll give you an example. When I started out as a freshman, I was going to go into marine biology. And I liked science. Obviously, I ended up teaching biology and physics. But I varied. I changed it. And actually, I got into psychology and cultural anthropology and all kinds of subjects I didn't even know existed, really, because I hadn't had courses in them. So what I would say is that, of course, science, math, engineering, they call that the STEM, is really good, but we're also going to be needing people that are great at sales. We're going to be needing people that are really good at being able to heal. We're talking doctors, nurses. We're going to need plumbers. We're going to need all sorts of people. So what I would like you to do is to go into college with what you currently love most, the thing you think you're really good at, but be open-minded, because you're probably going to find some new avenues and build change into your plan.
Yeah, that's great advice. Because I do hear that often, you know, that sometimes students, you know, with AI and all these things, things are rapidly changing. You know, what direction should they go into?
Here's their thinking. Henry, here's the way they really have trouble. They think they have to have their entire future figured out before they go to college. In other words, I got to have it all figured out. Here's what my degree is. Here's what I'm going to end up doing. Here's my future job. And frankly, I've talked to so many people, hundreds of thousands of people over the years, and most of them are doing something different than they even got their degree in. So, you know what I mean? It's that life is an evolution. It's a number of chapters in your book of life. There isn't just one chapter. So instead of trying to have to figure out your entire life and put all that pressure on in trying to figure out what to take as a freshman in college, I think you ought to pick a direction and get on the right path, but realize you're going to discover some other directions, and that's okay.
That's beautiful.
It's an evolution.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So do you have anything to share that we have not covered? And do you have any closing reflections?
Yeah, well, first of all, I will respond to the one of the many little tidbits that you covered that were in my book. And there are a lot of good ones in there, I think, too. But one of them you said is choose to be extraordinary. Let me take a second, because that might be a good way to end this. And that is that I've done quite a bit of study of extraordinary people, and most of them were not born extraordinary. Most of them were ordinary people that until some point in their life, they stopped doing ordinary things and they started doing extraordinary things. For example, when Mother Teresa was 12, she wasn't running around saying, hey, I'm going to grow up and be an extraordinary nun called Mother Teresa. No, she was a normal kid, and she was a normal nun until all of a sudden, she stopped being an ordinary nun and started becoming an extraordinary nun. What was the difference? It's simple. It's not that hard. Whatever you're about to do, and if you're a student and you're about to raise your hand and ask a question, wait, before asking that question, ask yourself, what kind of question would an extraordinary student ask? Ask that question instead. If you're about to give a sales presentation, instead of doing what you've always done in all your past sales presentations, wait, stop a second and ask yourself, what would an absolutely extraordinary sales presenter do today? Think about that and do that instead. And when you start asking, what would an extraordinary person do instead, and you think about it, you'll actually come up with what to do. And when you start doing that with your daily activities, pretty soon people are going to start saying, wow, you're extraordinary. And the reason is you are, because you chose to be. We can all be extraordinary. We can all be anticipatory. We can all shape a positive future actively for ourselves, for our family, and for all those around us. The key is not just reacting and putting out fires, not just getting fogged in by all the news that's out there, but rather blowing the fog away, seeing those hard trends and those amazing opportunities and taking advantage of them. And once again, if you want to find out more, you could go to my website, which is Burrus, BURRUS.com. I have a lot of great resources on there for you, as well as getting the book, which is theaobook.com. You could go there. Got to pay a little bit for shipping, but you'll get it. And I would say it'll give you the tools to be able to shape a positive future.
Oh, that's beautiful. You are an extraordinary person, Daniel.
Yeah, well, thank you.
It's been just been delightful talking to you about you and your amazing work and the wonderful book, The Anticipatory Organization: Turned Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage, and Discover 25 proven strategies to accelerate innovation and transform results. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's been a real pleasure. Real pleasure. Good night. I would like to thank our guest, author Daniel Burrus, for being here to discuss his book, The Anticipatory Organization: Turn Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage. For more information, please visit www.burrus.com. That's BURRUS.com, or theaobook.com. And then you can get your book. You just have to pay shipping and handling. I would like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. To each and every one of you out there, thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Garrison, and connecting here online with Andrea. Listen to me live or listen to the archive. Just continue connecting heart to heart. But in the meantime, do whatever you can to reach out to help others. And never underestimate the power of a friendly smile. Take care.
Thank you for connecting to Online with Andrea, with your host, Andrea Garrison.